This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Andrew Collins, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Whatever
Hello.
Time of day it is. So we have reviews coming up for Babylon AD, Ben X, which is not the same as Ben 10, the children's favourite.
No.
The Strangers and the Whackness. We'll do a quick box office top 10 for you. Space Chimps at 10.
Yes, this is a vehicle for somebody from Saturday Night Live who I've never really seen. Or Andy Samberg, he just provides a voice of a monkey. This is a cheap CGI, but cheerful CGI movie about monkeys in space.
Star Wars, The Clone Wars
another,
at 9.
Another cheap, cheerful. It's an element of the Star Wars saga that you or I probably don't need, but fans, real fans, the ones who wear elasticated waistbands, they will be very keen to see just some more of the Star Wars saga. It's basically a pilot for a TV series, which is coming soon from George Lucas, Inc.
Wall-E at 8.
The most successful animated film of the year now, officially, I think, in terms of box office, and, puts these other two in the shade. This is how it's done.
Wild Child at 7.
Yeah, Julia Roberts' niece, Emma, comes to this country. She's a Malibu princess. She comes to this country to a boarding school, and that's basically all you need to know about that.
The Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor at 6.
I, alone among film critics, liked this. No one else liked it. It's only at number 6. I think it's a fine third part of a franchise, and they've cheered it up by going east.
You don't mess with the Zohan at 5.
Yes, it's Adam Sandler. Not one of my favourite, I must admit, but a lot of people do love him. He co-wrote it. He's in it. He plays a Mossad agent who comes to New York and pretends to be a hairdresser. That's a good setup for some gags. It's quite a vulgar film. And I have to warn you that it's got Rob Schneider in it playing an Arab taxi driver.
The Dark Knight's at 4.
Yeah, I liked this less than other critics. What am I doing? I don't want to be friends with other critics, do I? I keep sort of stepping out
of
line. They're
all rather strange people.
Yeah, it's now made $500 million in the US. It's a good film. It's just not the brilliant film that it ought to be, to have been, you know, one of the most popular films ever made.
Get Smart at 3.
Yeah, this is based on a 60s TV series, which most people don't really remember. It's now out on DVD again. Steve Carell with his emotionless face doing comedy. I don't know how he manages it. And it's got a lot of old people in it who are very good, like Alan Arkin, James Caan, Bill Murray. So worth it for the cameos, but don't worry otherwise.
Mamma Mia at number 2.
It's so successful, this film. I haven't seen it. I'm not going to go and see it, as I've announced on this programme before, because it makes people dance and sing in the cinema, and I don't think either of those two things should be encouraged.
Well, Per Jacobson on this email says, have you noticed it currently that Mamma Mia is showing in more cinemas in the UK than any other, and that so far it's earned more than £50 million,
That's
more
true.
Than Dark Knight. Also understand the cinemas have found a way to overcome Pierce Brosnan's singing voice. They arrange sing-along showings of the film.
This is the new thing, sing-along showings. Now, I can't object to that. If you're going along and it's a sing-along showing, you'll expect to hear singing along, but I don't want that in the cinema.
Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, is the box office number one.
Well, he's not here, but it'll please him greatly. Mark Kermode loves this film, as he loves the entire works of Guillermo del Toro. This is basically part two of the Hellboy saga. It's set in the future, and it's humans versus monsters, and Ron Perlman's Hellboy is on the side of the humans.
Right, so that's the way it is. But it may well be that you've seen all those, or you're just not moved by any of those. You want to go and see something that's brand new and interesting.
Yeah.
What do we go with first?
Can I just mention what's at number 13? Summer's Town, which I know Mark liked and I like very much. Shane Meadows' new film. Very short, black and white, just a very low-key film. I don't know whether people will want to pay the full price to go and see a film that's about 75 minutes long, but nevertheless it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, Mark was saying it has to be over 62 to be a feature.
Yeah, and it only just makes it. It's like the difference between an EP and an LP in old money, and I noticed that it's made £121,345 in its first week of release, which for a small film is not bad, and as I say, it's number 13, so not even in the top 10.
EPs were great, weren't they?
Yeah, EPs were clever, but it all went wrong when people started to put remixes as B-sides.
Is it more than three sides for an EP?
I think
EP?
It has to become four is an EP, yeah. And I think you can go up to 6. I know, do they have EPs anymore anyway, Simon?
No one cares. Let's do a new movie then.
Yes, The Whackness, which when I went to see this at a screening in London, I was slightly taken aback to find Ben Kingsley at the screening. He is the star of this film. It's one of those coming-of-age movies. It's set in 1994, which is significant, in New York. It's about a young boy who's just left high school, played by Josh Peck, who's called Luke, and he's basically a drug dealer. He deals only soft drugs, but nevertheless. And he pays his psychiatrist, Dr. Squires, played by Ben Kay, in grams of marijuana. And so it's about their relationship, basically, between a man and a boy. And let's hear them talking to each other first, then I'll explain the significance of 1994.
Do you have any idea what I would give to be you again? Not you specifically, but me at your age? Doesn't get any better. Get your heart broken. Find yourself face down in the gutter. Get your pulse up. Make a real mess of a life, son.
This is what you tell all your patients.
You're not depressed, Luke. You're sad. There's a difference.
No, I'm depressed. I'm mad depressed, yo.
So just give me some of those happy pills. We can call it a day.
Sorry, Luke, I can't do that.
And how do you suggest I deal then?
I suggest you talk about it with a friend.
Like I said, I don't have any friends.
You have me.
Great.
There's a actually Ben Kingsley's accent doesn't sound as good as it does when you're watching it. So I don't know whether that, I hope that didn't put
What's happened between that version and you watching
just,
it?
Just hearing it there, it was a few sort of seconds where I thought he was slightly losing his New York accent. But you don't think of that when you're watching it. It's a very fine performance, one of his good performances. As I say, Ben Kingsley at the screening was very, very off-putting, and I met him, and it's very nice to meet him. He's a splendid individual. But the night before, I'd seen The Love Guru, the awful Mike Myers film, in which he plays a comedy character with cross eyes, and. I was kind of doing everything I could not to bring that up with him. But anyway, the whackness re-establishes his acting skills, which we knew were already there. And I really enjoyed it. 1994 is an interesting setting, I think, because this boy, Luke, is supposed to be a kind of an unpopular boy at school. Now, I don't really understand that because he seems quite charming to me, and he's certainly not ugly. But nevertheless, he apparently finds it difficult to get girls, and he ends up getting off with the psychiatrist's stepdaughter, so there's intrigue there. But this year of 1994 was in the same way that Hellboy is about the clash between the monsters and the humans. This was the clash between East Coast and West Coast rap, and it was the year that Biggie Smalls, Notorious B.I.G., put out his album Ready to Die, and suddenly East Coast rap was big. It was also the time Rudy Giuliani, the mayor, was introducing his policy of getting rid of all the nastiness from the streets of New York and from Manhattan, using the broken window policy, which is, if you have, you know about the broken window policy.
Yes, it's if you tackle the small crimes, then the big ones.
Yeah, and he was doing this. So you know, it's a snapshot of New York. However, if you read reviews in things like the Village Voice, they're very down on the film. They think it is indeed whack, which is where the title The Whackness comes from, rather than dope, which is good. But I don't come from New York and I don't work for the Village Voice, and I enjoyed it very much. It's a good acting film and it's very low-key.
Mark uses this maxim, which I disagree with, actually, but it's worth repeating at moments like this about Ben Kingsley. When he's good, he's very, very good. Yeah. And when he's bad, he's Gandhi. Would that hold for this film?
He does a lot of work, right? He makes no mistake about that. He works all the time. He does, you know, in the same way that Guillermo del Toro apparently makes one film for us and one film for himself. And Ben Kingsley does that. He makes kind of a couple of films for himself and then one film for the rest of the world. And this is certainly one for himself, I think. He knows this is good. And it won the Audience Award at Sundance. And it's also, because it's set in this particular time, there's a lot of stuff about mixtapes, the handing out and compiling of mixtapes, which now seems kind of really antique and sweet and quaint. And I quite like that, really. I think it's an interesting thing that the 90s is now becoming a nostalgic time for filmmakers. I like that.
And was Ben Kingsley in Thunderbirds, was that one for us or one for him?
That was one for the money, wasn't it? One for the money.
I thought that was great. I rather enjoyed that. 14 to 4, we'll do some more. What's going to be next, Andrew?
This is another coming-of-age film, really, Times and Winds. It's an absolutely beautiful-looking film, and it's absolutely exquisite to watch. It's about three young teenagers in a mountainous region of Turkey. It's never actually named. We're looking at goat herders living off the land, subsistence farmers. It doesn't say whether it's set now or in 1994 or any other time, so we don't know if it's a period piece or a modern piece. I imagine life for the goat herder in rural Turkey hasn't changed a great deal over the years. And it's about, as I say, three kids coming of age. One of them fancies a school teacher. You know, you've heard these individual stories before. The girl is worried because her parents are having another baby and she'll end up looking after it. Another one wants to kill his dad in a kind of Oedipal subplot, which is amazing. His dad's the imam. And it's based around the rhythm of a day where the imam sings the call for prayers five times a day. So it's a very, very gentle film to watch. There's some kind of gloomy parts. There's some other parts that are just absolutely stunning to look at. And there are odd sort of vignettes where the camera pans across these children that we see moving about as if they're dead. And it never explains why. It's almost as if this is some kind of portent of something to come. It's as if they've been gassed and they're just lying there in the bushes. So it's got an amazing amount of depth. I want to see it again. I've seen it once. I could easily see it again right now. And I'll be interested to know what people think. Well, we'll see next week if anyone can find it.
Mike, on this email, Simon, just a word of warning about Babylon AD that Andrew will be reviewing later. I imagine, or now, actually,
now?
In this case, maybe. Following on from the ongoing discussion about box and phone box advertising. Bus and phone box advertising. This is based on Mark's theory. This is like anything that's advertised on a phone box is rubbish. I had an alarming incident last weekend at the West Brom versus Everton game. While standing at the urinal before said game, I was alarmed to see that in my eyeline was Vin Diesel's menacingly vacant spud head staring gloomily back at me on a poster for his new sci-fi opus, which is in inverted commas. Two things sprung into my head. One, is this the worst location of film advertising to date? The toilets of the Hawthorns is surely not known as a hotbed of sci-fi geek diesel lovers. And two, being associated with such a shabby-looking film means that we were destined to lose. And we did. There we go. In football urinals, is this a new low? I'm assuming, of course, that Babylon AD is rubbish because everything with diesel is. Cheers from Mike Adams. Well, we're about to find out.
Well, I mean, the plot of the film, we'll hear in a clip in a second, but Vin Diesel is basically a bounty hunter set sometime in the future after what appears to be a nuclear accident, a Chernobyl-style nuclear accident, which has kind of turned Russia into a wasteland, which is very interesting. New York seems to be okay, and that's where he has to take this charge. He has to pick her up in Russia, take her to New York. Here he is getting his instructions from unrecognisable Gerard Depardieu.
I need a smuggler.
I don't do refugees anymore. Use your own cargo. You own the borders anyway.
Only on this side.
This is an overseas delivery?
A girl. She needs to be in America in 6 days.
Why are you playing with me? You know I can't get back into that country. You know that UN passports are impossible to fake.
This is not a fake. Inject it in your neck when you pass the official border. This is your new life.
I'll do it for half a mil.
I can make you do it for free.
You can't make me, Gorsky. But you can pay me what I need so I can get the job done right.
A car will pick you up outside. Everything you need will be in the trunk. Cross me. And you'll have no place to hide anymore.
Love the voice.
There's your setup. What, wonder what Vin Diesel sounds like when he's feeling a bit tired. So he sounds like normally. He's a big, tough bloke. He looks fantastic. Unfortunately, occasionally in this film, which is basically a shooting and fighting film, once you've had that bit of plot, effectively then, it's only short. It's only 90 minutes long. So despite all these pretense, there's a lot of pretense towards it being a philosophical film. There's this religion led by Charlotte Rampling, which is kind of, it seems like it's set up by a pharmaceutical company, and it's really difficult to know what's going on. Her face appears on billboards all the way through it, but it's never really explained. Nothing is explained. It's just basically Vin Diesel on a snowmobile or running through some scary Russian streets with his little charge and a kung fu nun played by Michelle Yeoh.
In general, there aren't enough kung fu nuns.
No, she's a good kung fu nun. You know, it's good to see Michelle Yeoh. But what I found in the production notes, this fantastic thing, it says this is exactly as it reads. While Babylon AD presents scenes of epic action and set pieces, which it does, Diesel was drawn primarily to his character's complexities. Uh-huh. And then he says, I approach each project from the perspective of the character first. That's what he says.
Yeah, sure.
He's a liar, isn't he? He's a big, old, muscly liar. It's not absolutely the worst film we've ever seen, but I hate the fact that it kind of wants to be Blade Runner or even The Fifth Element. It's got pretense, which it doesn't really back up.
Some members of my family have been seduced by the advertising, have already told me, Dad, if you like Blade Runner, you're really going to like Babylon AD.
No.
I was thinking already... In Your Dreams.
Yeah, directed by Matthew Kasovitz, who is an actor as well, and was actually in, I think, The Fifth Element, and he directed La Haine, which is a fantastic film. This is, I think he's disowned it already. I don't think he likes the final cut.
What else is new, Andrew?
Well, let's go to The Strangers first, because we have a clip of The Strangers, which is, this is a film that makes you jump.
I've seen a trailer for this, designed to make you jump.
Posters kind of give too much away, I think, because there's a scene in one of the posters with the character Liv Tyler plays in this amazingly remote cottage, and behind her you can see a man with a white mask on. Now this is one of the great shots in the film at the beginning, because you don't expect it, you don't know there's anyone inside
now.
The house. Well, now it's in the posters. The posters are telling you this, isn't it? Let's hear a bit of Liv Tyler snivelling.
Jimmy,
Kristen,
there's someone out there.
What are you doing?
There's somebody out there. Stop!
Come here. Sit down. How do you know there's somebody out there?
I saw a man at the back door. He's wearing a mask.
What do you mean? What do you mean? Like a ski mask? What?
I don't know.
Calm down.
Jimmy, I'm so scared.
Okay.
Oh, don't like that blade there.
No, I mean, it is mostly, it says, it's a 15 certificate, and it says, you know, includes strong psychological violence. It's a psychological film. It's not one of these gory horror movies, which I think is a good development, really. And it is about, not a haunted house, but a house in the middle of nowhere, and three strangers on the outside trying to get in and terrorise this young couple who've just basically decided not to get married and have got problems of their own, which are pretty much glossed over after the first 10 minutes. And there are moments in it that will make you leap out of your seat. I was lucky when I went to the screening that I was sat next to these seasoned film critic Angie Errigo, who all the way through was going, and covering her face up. And she was a superb company, I must admit. So you need to go with somebody who's going to jump if you're not going to jump. But frankly, they urinated away at the end, because I'm not telling you what the ending's like, but you're kind of expecting some kind of explanation. And I'm not giving anything away to say there is not a satisfactory explanation nor a satisfactory ending.
Right. Is it one of those films that just stops?
It doesn't just stop. It's just that, you know, it builds up and builds up. And it is effectively done at the beginning. There's just banging on doors and the sound of tinkling chimes outside the house. And it does make you a bit frightened, I must admit. But then it doesn't take you anywhere. It's the first time director Brian Bertino, and I'm sure he'll live to make another jumpy film again.
And is Liv Tyler quite a good scream queen?
She's all right, actually. Yeah, she is all right. But nevertheless, I think we all expected better of her, really, than to do films like this.
Your whole manner suggests that you've got a couple of quickies that you'd like
to... Well, I've got a lot more films to do. I've worked hard for my money this week, but the last two are so poor, I don't mind if we don't mention them. In fact, I'll just mention them, shall I? And say, go and see them.
All right, just mention them and then we'll sit in silence for 2 minutes.
Don't go and see Angel, which is the most misconceived thing I've ever seen. I watched it this morning. I almost don't understand what it was. It's directed by a French director, François Ozon, who has a great reputation, and it's an English language movie set in Edwardian times. And it's got this precocious child played by Romola Garai, who I normally like. Why she took the part? She's so irritating all the way through it, and you see her through her life into adulthood, and it's just unbearable. And I don't know whether it's supposed to be a joke, a parody of these kind of period movies, I don't know, but it's absolutely disgraceful. Don't go anywhere near it.
Angel is rubbish. What else is rubbish?
Daylight Robbery is rubbish, because if I just tell you it's a British film about a bank heist, that's all I need to tell you. Do we need another one of those?
I've seen quite a few. In fact, coming back on the plane from China, I think I saw about six.
Yeah, well, don't go and see Daylight Robbery. Just hasn't got anything to recommend it. But Ben X is worth seeing if you can see it, because it's an unusual film. It's a Belgian film, therefore it's in Flemish. And it's about a boy who has Asperger's syndrome. And it actually gets inside his head quite well. But also he's hooked on this role-playing computer game. So all the way through, you see graphics from the computer game where he lives out a more ordered life, basically, in this kind of medieval game. But in real life, he gets incredibly horrible bullying at school, and he's in love with the girl who he plays this role-playing game with, who he's never met before. It's quite an emotional film. Again, the ending does not really justify what you've been through, but it's an interesting film, and it's another debut feature by a director called Nick Balthazar.
Yeah, and according to this email from Stuart in Southampton, Nick Balthazar is making an English language version.
Is he now? That's interesting.
Mainly aimed at the US.
Well, that's very interesting. I mean, they always do that, don't they? Because they know that people are too lazy to go and see foreign films.
Slightly unnecessary.
Yeah, there's no need for that. But anyway, it's not bad if you can find it. I dare say we're talking selected cinemas again.
And that's Ben X, not, as I said before, not to be confused with Ben 10. Which
or
will...
Ben K, the well-known acting knight.
So, movie of the week?
Movie of the week, for me, is Times and Winds, but I think The Wackness is worth seeing as well.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.